So now can we turn to look at the Gospel of Matt, that chapter that we read in the Gospel of Matt. And with God's help, can we pick, as it were, three markers, not a threefold text, but as it were, three markers within that chapter to guide our thoughts. One, at verse 3, who shall roll away the stone. And then we'll move on to verse 6, he is risen, he is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. And then the next verse, the promise, or the fulfillment of the promise rather, he goes before you to Galilee, and there shall ye see him as he said unto you. Who shall roll away the stone? He is risen, he is not here, and he goes before you. And there shall you see him. Here we have the account that we all know so well, the account of three ladies, followers of the Lord Jesus Christ, with blessing in their souls, and also with the best of intentions and goodwill in their hearts. And yet, with a substantial, in fact, a great burden on their minds. Who shall roll us away the stone? Who shall roll us away the stone? And this same account is also one which mirrors the dilemma in so many ways that confronts God's people. The dilemma confronts God's faithful people. And that dilemma is I don't know what the plural for dilemma is, but there's many of them, as there are people, as there are hearts and souls, as there are groups of people. It's not only dilemmas for individuals, but also for groups of God's people, for congregations, and for the church as a whole, so often. For example, perhaps a congregation with no minister. How can we survive without a guide? How can we survive as a congregation? How can we survive as a group? How can we survive perhaps as a denomination? And then when we really, I'm not sure whether it's pessimistic or faithless, but the thought comes to us, how can God's church survive in such a dark age as that in which we live in? And these dilemmas, and also individually, perhaps we can see God's will for us. We hear God's call in our heart. How are we going to respond? How are we going to do what we feel that God is calling us to do? I've never done this before. These kind of thoughts, in so many ways and in so many different words, who shall roll us away the stone? We prayed this morning for two congregations of our own denomination. Congregation of Cavendish, the congregation in Prince Edward Island. And we've been praying every week for two as the year has been going on. That's an example of how we can, when this dilemma comes to our mind and to our heart, who shall roll us away the stone, to bring it to God in prayer. Another example, we can, even in our own human mind, as the years pass ever more quickly, and we were talking about that in the portion hole we came in, how the years are rolling on ever and ever more quickly, like a boulder rolling down a glen, clach of a glen, and we're rolling with it. And we can see the inevitable in God's providence coming ever closer to us, and the dilemma in our mind, How are we going to withstand it? How are we going to prepare for it? Forgetting that God is preparing us day by day and year by year. Even Ian Barrett announcing that it is coming ever more quickly. Who shall roll us away the stone? Because in God's path of life for us, it's so easy for us to see the mountain. We always see the mountain, but we can so easily forget him who has promised to remove that mountain from our path. Remember, we read in Prophecy of Isaiah. We always ask, who shall roll us away the stone? But as we read, every valley shall be exalted, and every hill shall be made low. Because in the outworking of God's providence for us, be it in his calling of us, or be it in these aspects of life, which our humanity pushes as far from us as we can, but we can't avoid. In all these things, we come face to face with him who has ordained it and who has it all in the palm of his hand. Because in all of these things, he himself is with us. And the valleys of our lives in which we meet him, they become, when we meet with him in these valleys, they become, with his grace, not valleys, not holes in our lives, but uplifting milestones to which we can point ourselves, remind ourselves, and point others as proof that at this low point, whatever that low point was, we met with God. Because there, in the despairing depths of that valley, he was there waiting for us, and he was there waiting for us to pick us up and to carry us up and forward. And the mountains which obstruct us, as it were, on the way, the insurmountable mountains which confront us on his path of life, every one of them seems to be, as these mountains come, they seem to be this last one that we can't get over. This one really is a difficult one. It seems to be the final wall that we just can't climb. And we don't willingly go towards them. In fact, we may back away from them. But the fact is that they relentlessly seem to roll towards us, as if they would roll over us. But then, have we noticed how, instead of, as we come closer and closer, or as they come closer and closer to us, have we noticed that rather than seeming higher and higher, they seem to change, as if we were being lifted over them, as if we were being lifted over them, which we were, until almost suddenly we find ourselves on the other side. And perhaps surprised that we've survived, but also if we have the mind and the heart to think of it, with a renewed realization that through to his eternal promise, God was on that mountain, God was on that wall, and that we have been literally uplifted over it by his grace. Every mountain and every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low. And then we ask ourselves, who now will roll away the stone? Who will roll away the stone? And the thing is that brings us to the point of these three ladies again. These three blessed ladies with their normal, everyday humanity. Remember what they went through over the last 3 days, seeing the crucifixion and all that followed, and all that went before. They could only see the stone. Their everyday humanity, as it were, intensified by what they'd gone through since last Thursday or Friday. They could only see the stone. They could only see the obstacle which lay between them and their purpose, which lay between them and the body of their Lord. But in spite of that, we don't read that they stopped. They didn't stop. They continued. I wonder if they were available to us and we were to ask them, how did you find the courage or the encouragement or the strength to carry on? What made you carry on? Knowing that huge and impossible obstruction was there before you. And I'm sure they might have said that, well, we're not sure, but looking back on it now, we somehow felt carried forward, despite their wanderings and despite even their doubts. And wanderings and doubts are all part of humanity and all part of the conflict between humanity and spiritual, between our flesh and blood and our spiritual selves. And then these three ladies, having carried on, they reached the grave. They reached that place which in almost one breath seemed almost beyond their reach, beyond their ability, and beyond their feeble, as we sometimes say, feeble female power. That place that represented such awesome and threatening finality as to make them powerless. What else except a grave will make us feel powerless? There's a finality and there's an aura of there's an aura about it that makes us feel powerless. Who shall roll us away the stone? And then, having persevered and having carried on and having reached it, they found the stone. The stone was there. But there was something different about the stone, because it was no longer an obstacle. Once they reached the stone, it was no longer an obstacle. That stone, that barrier which separated them from their Lord, had been rolled away. And it was now an impotent and a useless and a harmless lump of stone. That's all it was. And so it is with all the obstacles and all the mountains that we so often see in our path. All those things which we can see as big enough and potent enough to stop us in our spiritual tracks. Yes, we can still see them, and we can still understand them, and we can understand why they seem so threatening. But the difference is that we now see them in a new light. We see them in a new light. They are impotent, and they are harmless, and they are behind us. They are in the past. And far from being obstacles and barriers now, they are reminders to us, and they are witnesses to us of the power which overcame them and which carried us with it to a place beyond their reach. And when they looked, verse 4, when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. And then they carried on, and they entered into the sepulchre, and they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment. And at verse 6, we read what he said to them. Don't be afraid. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. He is risen. He is not here. Look, that's where he was. And he's no longer there. The supreme act had been accomplished, and these three ladies who had come to carry out the final service humanly possible for their Lord with prayerful hearts, they not only very quickly forgot the obstacle that had filled their mind's eye, but they also found that God in his glory had been ahead of them and answered that prayer far beyond what they could ever, as we still use the words in their own prayers, far beyond what they could ever think or ask. These ladies went to the grave only with the prayer that somehow they might find the strength to roll away the stone. And yet see how their prayer was answered away far and beyond what they could ever think. Who could think that he who was dead could ever be alive, or risen and taken away from the grave? Nobody would ever dare to even think that far. And yet, that was the answer that God gave him. He had answered that prayer far beyond what they could ever think or ask. And he had raised the crucified Lord from the dead and from the grave. He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. The stone had been rolled away. And for many years, I used to ask myself the question, why? Why did the stone have to be rolled away? Because after the resurrection, we know that the risen Christ appeared through closed doors and in other humanly surprising circumstances. So, that question in my mind for years was, did the stone have to be rolled away to release him from the grave? And the simple answer to that is no. The stone didn't have to be rolled away to release him from the grave, for him to escape the tomb. That stone was rolled away so that all the world could be able to look in, not only the ladies, but that the whole world could look in and see the vacant emptiness of that grave. He is no longer here. This is the place where he was and where they laid him. The open and the empty tomb was and is a most eloquent witness, declaring to all the world and to the end of time these very words of the angel. He is risen, he is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. And we haven't been to the Holy Land, some of you might have been, but we hear that this is one of the places where pilgrims are taken to see and to witness for themselves and to look into the open grave, because there is no longer any stone. This is where he was. He is risen, he is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. He had been victorious over death and over the grave, and to the end of time, that empty grave is a witness to all the world of its own defeat. A witness of its own defeat. And all of God's people can confront death, that final obstacle which we talked about earlier on, can confront the grave with the confident defiance given to us by the Apostle Paul. O death, where now is thy sting? O grave, where now is your victory? He is risen, he is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But the angel didn't stop there. The angel continued to speak. And he told the ladies, go your way and tell his disciples and Peter that he goes before you into Galilee. There shall you see him as he said unto you. Now, let's go into the middle of that for a second. He said, go your way, tell his disciples and Peter. And Peter, remember, Peter was the one who was most like us. He was the precipitate one, the one who opened his mouth before he decided what he was going to say. He was the precipitate one. He was the careless one, the one who was most like us. And he was the one who had denied him. Not once, not twice, but three times. And he was the one with a guilty conscience. He was the one with a mountain of guilt on his mind and in his heart. Go your way, tell his disciples and the guilt-ridden Peter that he goes before you into Galilee. And there you will all see him as he said unto you. And here we have the continuum of the resurrection and already the fulfillment of the observation. And I use that word observation he was to make so pointedly to his disciples later when he said, lo, I am with you always. And that's why I say observation. Because when we read that carefully, we often see that as a promise. No, I am with you always. And we use that word as a promise. And I remember an old man from Nessen, one of my own colleagues, Nethremus Hughes, if any of you knew him. I remember him warning me to be careful of using the word promise. Because some of the things he said you read in Scripture are not really a promise. And this is one of them. Because he said, lo, I am. It's not a promise. And I've said that here, I'm sure, several times before now. He said, look, I am with you always. Not a promise, a statement of fact. And that's where he used the word there, observation, rather than promise. The observation he was to make to them so pointedly later on. Lo, I am with you always. And if you look carefully with open mind, with open eyes, with a believing heart, you will see what is in front of your face. That I am with you. Who else would lift you over that mountain? Who else would raise that valley? I am with you always. Not a promise, a statement of fact. He goes before you into Galilee. He goes before you into where you come from. He goes before you into that place where you live. He goes before you into that place that you know best. And he goes before you into the everyday places that you know best. And even when you are not thinking of them, because that is really your space, your work perhaps, or where you happen to be every day in your daily life, in your daily work. I am with you always. He goes before you into Galilee. He goes before you into where you live. He goes before you into the places and into the situations that you know best. And in going before you, He goes before you, even into the places into which you would not wish to go, the places that you wish to try to avoid. He goes before you into the places that you would try to avoid, but which cannot be avoided. And he goes before you into the towering and threatening mountain over which you must travel. And he is there waiting to carry you through when your own strength would fail you. He goes before you into the depths of the every dark and dreary valley and hole, and through that final valley through which we must all pass. And he fills the darkness of that valley with his light. Yea, though I walk in death's dark way, we read the words of the psalmist, yet I will fear none ill, for thou art with me, and thy rod and staff me comfort still. And then, when the dust of this turmoil in which you are, that word tells us, when that dust settles, and you are able to think and see and believe more clearly, there and then you will see him. And having seen him, you will know that he has been with you. Not only that, but you will know that he was there before you. He goes before you, into Galilee, as he said unto you. He is risen. He is not here. He goes before you. And he has conquered death itself. He's conquered it for us. He's conquered it on our behalf. And just as death has had no dominion over him, his resurrection is his seal of authority by which his own can believe, can truly believe his words. Because I live, you will live also. Who shall roll us away the stone? He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. And the third aspect, he goes before you into Galilee. And there you will see him, if you have the eye of faith to look and to see and to believe what you are seeing. He goes before you into Galilee, and there shall you see him, as he said unto you. Amen. And may God add his blessing to these few thoughts upon that precious section of his word.